I'm Robin Crane, and this is the Growing Your Financial Business the Woman's Way podcast. Listen, I was a financial advisor for over a decade, and I got so sick of the old archaic strategies that your grandpa used to get clients. What the industry teaches today is still so outdated and just doesn't work anymore. So I had to find a better way for myself, and then I got obsessed with sharing these how-tos with other women like me. The stuff I teach doesn't require giving up your life, your sanity, or your family time. I want women like you to have it easier than I had it, so you can thrive in the industry. I've now helped thousands of women grow their financial businesses to multiple six figures, some even seven figures per year. So on this podcast, you're going to get an inside look at how they did it so you can do it too. Let's dive into the show.
Welcome back. Now, this is very special. We rarely do this, but this is a second episode with Jocelyn Herman Saccio. And I'm excited to bring her on because I got so enthralled with her past of like the fact that she was in a girl band called Boy Crazy and just all the things that came up. I don't even remember what we talked about, but I know it was
like a whirlwind, right?
It was awesome though. And I was like, okay, we got to do this again because we were just starting to scratch the surface of all this stuff that she calls unmessable. And I don't know anything about it. So, but we started talking a lot about, you know, how she grew up having, just access to personal development, which most kids don't have even at 11 years old. And I was just amazed by that and started to think about my kids and how I want to get them involved in that stuff really early on. And we do some stuff, but I was more motivated after the conversation with Jocelyn, and there was a lot of good stuff we talked about mindset wise. So we'll make sure to get you that episode number once I have it in a minute, but I want to dive into this whole unmessable thing. So tell us, what the heck does that mean? And what is that about?
Yeah. So whenever I say or write or whatever unmessable with people go, ooh, I like that. But what does it mean? Right. Mm-hmm. So I
it creates curiosity. That's for sure.
It does. But it's not, I'll start by saying what it doesn't mean. Cause I think what it elicits is sort of like this default meaning of being tough or something. And that's not what it is. It's not about not feeling.
Wait, before you tell me, should I try guessing?
That's sure.
Fun game. Okay. So let me think. When I think unmessable, like to me, that means that you cannot be messed up because you're unmessable. And so maybe that would mean you're kind of put together. And like, so you have a lot of confidence and nothing's going to take you down because you're unmessable. Did I get close?
It's very close. It's more unmessable with is really what it is. Unmessable kind of, you know, that whole thing, you can't get messed up, you're put together, is elicited by that. But unmessable with, it's like stuff can't get to you. Mm. Not so much that your presentation is put together, but, you know, it's about real life. It's not about having perfect circumstances, because that would be nice, but I haven't found a course that gives you perfect circumstances. So it's more about whatever the real circumstances you're dealing with, whether it's, you know, life throwing stuff at you with your career, or your family, or your well-being, or other people's well-being, you know, as we get older and our parents are dealing with whatever they're dealing with, that you're able to stay in that space of creation instead of getting hooked or in the space of reaction. So you're able to keep fulfilling on your vision no matter what life is throwing at you. That's what I mean by being unmessable with. So it's not like that tough.
It's kind of like unstoppable though. Like you're like, I'm on the path. Like I always say this at my events. I just had this Position Yourself for Profits event, and it's a 3-day event. It was virtual and all that. But I always talk about like being on the path, and like that if you're on the path, as long as you stay on the path, it's all about becoming like who you're meant to be. And if you're in the becoming, like you can't go wrong, because if you're like, you know, they're afraid to invest in themselves and, oh, that's so much money, how could I do that? Or I'm new and whatever. And I'm not trying to convince anyone, but I just know that you can't really make that mistake, because as long as you're on the path, if you don't believe it's the right fit and you don't think that working together makes sense and you don't like my stuff, like then obviously don't work with me. But when it comes to that, like, hey, you have an opportunity to work with me, and like people start getting freaked out, like a question I have is like, is this the path for you? And if, as long as you're on the path, like there, it doesn't even matter. Not that they don't get an ROI, but the ROI doesn't even matter so much, because it's more about the becoming, like who are you and who are you meant to be? And then the rest falls into place as long as you keep stepping on that path and like to becoming the person you truly can be. So that's my take on it. But going back, okay, so unmessable with, I got it. All right. So How'd you come up with this? I mean, I know your background a bit, lots of personal development. You did Landmark and Forum at a very young age. You did other personal development at a young age at 11, but then this is all just on memory. I didn't even study this.
I'm so proud of myself.
No, now that I'm seeing you, I remember everything, our whole conversation coming back. But then you used to lead Landmark Forum, which if you haven't heard of Landmark Forum, it's an amazing personal development event and program. How did you come up with this unmessable with thing, and how do you, and tell us, like, teach it to me, like, help
well,
me
give
understand
you,
how to
like,
use it.
When it got begun, you know, like the seeds of it. So when I was 11, my first glimpse of what I'm calling unmessable with was my mother, because she and my father were separated, and she was very much like a victim of the situation. He had been cheating on her. It was like this whole drama, and she was at the effect of it, right? And then she did a transformative workshop, and she came out of that thing like a totally unrecognizable human being, like a force of nature. Everything she said was getting fulfilled on. She said, I'll have a job within 2 weeks. She had a job. She found an apartment under the amount of rent that he gave her the parameter. She did. She was in the PS6 school district in New York. And it was like, she just was making magic. And I just was struck with the transformation, like going from one world to another, right? So reaction to creation. I didn't have the language unmessable with at that time, but the sense of it was right there. So now flash forward, I was always dreaming to be a singer since I was four, right? But there was a belief I had that you can't do your art as your career. And that messed with me. Like, that stopped.
Was that something like your parents said or everybody said? It was like,
well, I was with my father at five in our Chevy Impala convertible, and he was smoking a cigar, and he used to paint. And I noticed that he wasn't painting as much. And I asked him, why aren't you painting at five? And he said, well, you can't do your art as your career. So he said it wasn't really that he said it, because he said a lot of things in my life that I didn't listen to, you know, that I said it to myself in that moment.
In the end, you didn't listen though, but that's how it all came together. So keep going.
Yeah. So that became like the lid on what was possible, that limiting belief. But at the time, it didn't seem like a limiting belief. It seemed like the truth. And I had lots of evidence for it. I had a lot of friends that were actors or whatever, and they were struggling. And I was like, no, thank you. I don't want to be a struggling artist. Right. I want to be successful. So I, you know, was running a company at 19 and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
go back to the original episode to find out more about
that. That's right.
Insert teaser.
Tease. Exactly. But then I did I did Landmark actually right in my early 20s. And I saw in that transformative workshop, because transformation is so great because you can see things that you didn't see before. You know, you get a glimpse of blind spots that have been limiting you. And I saw that moment when I was five. And I thought, wow, what if that's not true? What if that's just something I decided in the infinite wisdom of five? And you have a five-year-old, you know how wise they are, right? So they just
super wise.
Oh, wow. And you can't tell them anything, right? So at that moment, it just loosened its grip and it became not so real. And it was more like something I made up, you know, and just it seemed really real. So because that stopped being so real, I started taking actions to fulfill on my vision of being a singer. It was no longer out of reach. And within 3 weeks, I had a record deal. So for me, that was me demonstrating not being messable with by that belief that had seemed so true for so long. And that's when I got committed to other people. I was like, if I could do this in 3 weeks from
that's
disappearing,
insane.
It's insane.
That's insane. Yeah. I want to work on me. I think I need to get on the couch and like work on me, but I want to talk about something totally not that relevant, but I still want to tell you and tell me, I'm going to tell you, even though the world might be listening. So when you first told me you were in a band called Boy Crazy, I was like, why does that sound so familiar? And it was like, I feel like my brother was in a band like that. But like, obviously, you know, then while we were on, you know, doing the whole interview, I'm like Googling you probably at the same time. And I'm like, oh, okay. It's definitely. And I kind of forgot, like, I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm just mistaken. Like, obviously it wasn't Boy Crazy. It must've been a different name. And anyway, then I told my mom about it. I'm like, I just interviewed this woman and I was telling her it was fun having you on the last interview. And she was from this girl band, Boy Crazy. And she's like, oh, Boy Crazy. Like, and I'm like, well, was Alan, did Alan have friends in a band called Boy Crazy, my brother, or was he in a band? And so anyway, then I like looked up the band, a different right, Boy right. Crazy, not with, is yours with a K?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, yours with a K. Okay, so the regular Crazy. And I looked it up and I found the song and I was like, I recognize this song. And I'm like, oh yeah, my brother was in this band. And then I messaged him and he's like, yeah, I was in a band called Boy Crazy. Cause it was like, there was a woman who played the drums. She was very good. And then a guy, and he was gay. And so my brother just played, I don't know, bass or something, but he was in the band called Boy Crazy.
That's hysterical. So
I was like, wait, there's a connection. So anyway, not that relevant, but still I had to tell you, and I figured why not tell you in front of everybody so they know.
And how randomly connected. That's like, you know, 2 degrees of separation.
That's crazy, right? Yeah. Okay. But anyway, back to you helping me have everything I want in life in 3 weeks.
Because you're a singer, right?
I would say I was. I wouldn't call myself a singer now. I was a singer-songwriter and I didn't go very far, but I had a few albums and I thought my thing was kind of like cynical love songs. And so, you know, I had a song called like, I Don't Want You. And
now I got to hear these. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Stuff like that. Yeah. I should send you my album. Just remind me. But yeah, it was not great, but kind of hilarious, which was my thing when I was talking about all I don't know if I'd call them men or boys, but that I was dating, but that's another story. Maybe you should interview me about my singer songwriter life.
Just
start the podcast just to interview me about my, cause that's the only way I'm telling you. Otherwise not, it won't happen behind closed doors. There always has to be an audience if I'm going to talk about anything. No. Okay. So unmessable with, like, it kind of can't be messed with. Like, you have a vision, you're going to do what you know. If you wouldn't have thought of this vision if it couldn't be real, right? You wouldn't have thought of that. And I don't know if I told you this, because I feel like I did say this on one of the podcasts, but my daughter, who's now 16, like I remember when in our old house in New Jersey, when she had this bunk bed and she used to get on the top and she's like, I want to fly. Mm-hmm. And like my husband, we don't say can't in our family. Like this is my husband started this. He's much better at personal development than I am, but like we have to do 3 pushups if we say can't in our family. And so, you know, I wasn't going to say you can't fly, but I said something like, well, you know, you can fly in your dreams. Cause she would say that she'd want to like sprinkle the fairy dust on us and she just want to fly. And so I just would tell her to fly in her dreams, but she was very focused on that as a young girl. And recently she started taking pilot lessons.
Isn't that
I'm like, well, hey, I guess she really did want to fly, you know,
found a way.
Like, who's saying, like, that would make me cry. Like, who's saying you can't do that. And so it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But yeah. So, okay. But 3 weeks is a lot faster. So
yeah, 3 weeks was pretty fast and it was miraculous, but it wasn't like mysterious because I started taking these actions. I started introducing myself to people as a singer, which at first felt like such a lie because I had no evidence. And it also felt like, you know, I still had this collapse of being a singer was like being a starving artist or being a loser. So if I said I'm a singer, it was like I was saying I'm a loser. Right. You know, I kind of felt, I think I'm older than you. I'm pretty sure. And I don't know if you remember the show Happy Days. Is that before your time?
I do know Happy Days, but I didn't watch it a ton.
Okay.
But,
well,
yeah, I mean,
Fonzie.
Yeah, I know character. Fonzie.
Well, the Fonz, he could not say the word wrong. Like he would go, you know, he couldn't say it. That's how it felt to say I was a singer. It was like this atrophied muscle. When I was 4, I would say, I'm a singer, I'm a singer, I'm a singer. I'd sing for my dogs, my stuffed animals. I don't care who you were, I'd sing for you. But as the muscle got atrophied inside of that limiting belief, it was like weak. So it took a bit to like a practice and I would justify it. I'd say, well, I'm a singer, but I also produce television commercials because I had to like justify or validate myself. Right. But the more I did it, the less I had to justify it. And it became more and more natural. And I recorded
in those 3 weeks.
3 weeks. And then I get this phone call. I'm telling you, you can't write this stuff.
Oh, you did tell me this, but you tell them in case they haven't heard the other. Yeah.
So I get a phone call that, you know, we heard you're a singer. And I'm like, how on earth did you hear that? One of the people I told them.
Yeah.
So it's not mysterious.
And that's how she got in the girl band boy crazy. Just which, even though I wanted the teaser, but you know, there's more in the other episode that we're going to tell you what episode number may be at the end. But
perhaps, or maybe we'll leave that
if I can figure it out. It might be a mystery. Okay, so if you were to say, because now you do it, now you've honed the craft. You kind of, we could say you got lucky back then. I mean, yes, totally. It's manifesting. You basically said, here's an idea. I'm going to not just have the idea. I'm going to put my words where my words are in my mouth.
Actions.
Is, I don't know. Yeah. Actions. Hopefully, and I'm going to start. Yeah. I don't know what the saying is, cause that didn't sound right at all. Money where my mouth is. That's usually what you say.
Yes.
Yeah. Money where my mouth is. Don't listen to me.
Which, that sounds horrible about. Too. Like,
yeah, we should dive into that. We should dive into that. Okay. But anyway, so you started saying things, and also what's interesting about what you said is that it was an identity. It's an I am statement. And, you know, I know you would know, and I don't know if those listeners would know, but like when you say something about your identity, it's like the strongest force on earth, according to Tony Robbins. And so if it's an I am, like, just like the opposite of if you say something negative, like I am stupid, it is ingrained in you, because it's not just like I have a tendency to make stupid mistakes, which also is not a nice thing to say, but saying I am stupid, it's like who you are, and you think that like, now this is you, right? So I am a singer. It also was like an identity shift that this is who you are. And now other people saw you that way, which of course, and I've learned a lot about building visions and thinking about visioning and stuff, that the more you talk about what you want, the more that everyone will conspire around you, not just the universe, but people you know, to make it happen, right?
Yeah, sharing is a huge part of it. If you keep stuff to yourself, the chances of it happening are exponentially lower than if you communicate it to people and get them in your game with you.
Cool. Okay, so are there steps to this or...
Well, there's definitely steps. And when I work with people, it depends on what they're out to accomplish. But I want to also put in that it's not just about fulfilling your dreams and visions and goals, because that's a big part of it. But it's also just about real life. Like, you know, my mother had a stroke. Like, how do I stay out of the world of reacting to that? And how do I keep in that space of creating? And, you know, what am I creating out of the situation? And what am I creating for my family in this moment right now? So it's not only about goals, you know, which of course people have goals, and especially effective people. And, you know, most people I coach are highly successful people and they're goal oriented, but it's also about reacting on a day-to-day basis. Like, you know, when the waiter doesn't bring you your check for a long time, and, you know, like, how do you not get irritated? How do you stay out of that space of being annoyed or frustrated or whatever those reactions are, survival mode, you know? So the work that I do with people, it begins with their vision, but then what gets unearthed is all that normal everyday stuff that hooks you, that sends you into that space that isn't like enlivening and magical.
And going to like the law of attraction, like if you're in these negative patterns and feeling mad all the time because the waiter doesn't bring you your food, or feeling frustrated about things, like, and you're constantly reacting, then what are you going to get? You know, you're going to get more things to react to. You're going to get more upset. You're going to get more negativity, which I know, but I don't always do the thing that's going to not make me upset.
But that's everybody, you know, not to do this or to do this, but then we get caught up in that muscle memory. And that's the thing that I intervene in and break so that you can have strategy. So when you say, are there steps? Yeah, but it depends on what you're dealing with, what the steps are. The generic steps are, you got to be able to see it. So I have people identify what their red flags are. Like when you are in one of those messable with moments that I call them, what's happening in your body? What is the telltale sign that you're being messable with? Are you, you know, tight in your chest? Are you shaking? Are you, you know, whatever it is physically that shows up, that way you can catch it before you go too far down the road. Once you're far down that road, it's like almost like, forget it. May the force be with you. It's just got to pass. So the key is catching it quickly so that you can rein it back, shift gears into, okay, what am I creating right now? You know, I'm creating peace with my mother. I'm creating being complete with my mom. So what action do I need to take to fulfill on that right now versus getting reactivated by that the doctors aren't handling it fast enough, and, you know, what's happening with these medical bills and, you know, or whatever it is.
I was working on that with my son the other day because he he gets upset about things, like things weren't in line. He likes things in the way they are. He's 5 years old and has a little bit, I'm not going to say OCD, but like, you know, he likes things in order and he gets a little obsessed about it. And so what usually happens, he gets upset, like something like this was the pillow, like the cleaners came and I don't know if I told the story already on podcast or was the coaching call. This is the problem. Well, this is why you need to listen to every episode if I'm telling the same story. There's a bed, he has his bunk bed. And then next to him, there's another bed that once like a friend brought over, because they stayed at our house and they used a bed and they're like, we're going to go take it to Goodwill and, or you can keep it. And now it's the bed that we jump, like the kids jump on. So now it's like trampoline in the house.
Yeah.
It's just the play bed really. But anyway, the cleaners came. And so they made it and like, he has stuffed animals and he has this like dinosaur blanket. So like with like the dinosaur head and then the arms that come out. So which he really likes. And so they set it up so nicely because the cleaners were here. And so there was like two pillows there and this and that, and it's all set up nicely. And we moved it a little bit and he was cold. So I took the dinosaur blanket off to put around him as a nice mother would. And he's like, you could just see it, like the frustration, like, no. Like it's like the end of the world because I just destroyed this thing that was really important to him. And so what I found with him is that like the way that these conversations typically end is that it ends in a hug. And like, so we end up like by the end, like he's upset and then we kind of deal with it. And then he hugs me and then he feels better. And so what I started doing is I start with the hug. And when I see the frustration, just like you're talking about, and it's like, okay, he's starting to get that frustration. I say, Maverick, just take a breath. Obviously we do the breath. I guess that's not obvious, but to me, we talk a lot about the breath, but taking a breath. And I said, come on, you want to give me a hug? And so come give me a hug. And like, you sit with it for a minute and try to calm him down first before he gets so, you know, crazy and riled up about it. So that
don't you wish somebody would start with a hug with you when you're with
the person
from the printer company, you know, it's
like, I'm just going to hug my, that's a good idea. I always think about the breath, but I never hug myself when I started to get frustrated. It's okay. I love you, Robs. Yeah.
Well, a hug does deal with the nervous system. It calms the nervous system down. But can you imagine if the customer service person said to you, okay, you now take a breath. Take a breath. You'd be like, oh, I'll give you a breath.
Oh yeah. Right. I do think it's like, it's funny that what's coming in my head is what my mom used to say, which is has not too much to do with this, but she would say it had more to do with taking drugs. I don't mean like recreational. I mean, taking like Advil and stuff. I used to get really bad cramps and she would say, stop the pain before it starts. And so my mom was a big fan of like, if you start to feel any little pain, you like put a pill in there, you know, and get rid of the pain, which I do not believe and agree with. Cause I like to have my body have, you know, like to take care of my body and not just try to use a painkiller. But the same principle kind of applies is like, stop the pain before it starts. You start to feel this anxiety, start to feel this nervousness or anger, frustration, and before it escalates to actually do something differently. Like you're talking about creation, right? So you say create a different, it's like kind of like creating a different pathway almost.
It's creating a different pathway, a different road, but also I recommend with people pre-creating something because in the heat of the moment, you know, you might be able to catch yourself and get to neutral for a second, but then you're right back in the soup of it, unless you've pre-created something else. Cause you know, in lieu of creating something, all you have is your reactions.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So I work with people to have almost like a generic go-to creation if they aren't in the space where they can actually on the spot create something. At least they have a go-to.
What's an example of that?
Like, you know, I do this process with people called dream source discovery process so that people can get to the source of why they have the dreams that they have and what do they really want? Like if I was working with an actor and I said, well, what's your goal? What's your dream?
What's your motivation?
Well, more like, what do you want to accomplish? So it's like, oh, I want to get an Academy Award, whatever. Okay, but now if you got the Academy Award, what would be available that isn't available? well, I'd be able to help people that, okay. And if you were helping, then what would be,
this so is like classic, like sales, real sales conversations. The same thing I would teach. I mean, it's about yourself, but it's also when you're helping someone else, like you're talking about coaching. I always say sales and coaching is the same. Like, I just want to get clear on what's holding them back and what do they want and helping them move forward. Right.
Yeah.
So drilling down to the real thing. Sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
No,
keep going.
Problem. No, it's not an interruption at all. But then, so whatever they get to, you know, it's like I'd be free or I'd have self-expression or whatever it is. I have them start there. So now bring that to the situation versus hoping to get it out of a goal being reached or out of a someday situation happening. So it's more about where you're coming from versus becoming, like you said before, it's like, as long as you're on the road to becoming, this is more like, who are you being right now as a matter of your having created it? So I'm going to bring self-expression to this conversation versus hope that at the end of it, I'll feel self-expressed. So I have them pre-create something like that, let's say freedom or self-expression, and they come from that and take an action that'll fulfill or express that space versus get something out of the situation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's similar to this vivid vision thing that Jennifer Hudi was talking about. I'm just looking up the episode. I talk about this one a lot. Episode 120. She's one of my favorite people. But episode 120 back in May. But she talks about you don't go to your vision, or you don't go towards your vision. You come from your vision.
Very, very much.
Oh, so very similar.
Yeah, completely.
Do you do that also on the other side? Because it also reminds me of like a coaching conversation I had with a prosperity coach that I was working with, where, you know, she would ask me, like, I had this belief that like, I don't want to be wrong, and recognizing that I don't want to be wrong. And how, like, I know how ridiculous that is from an outside perspective, because I'm like, you know, we all have heard, maybe not everybody, but you know, you could be right, or you could be rich, you know, you could be right, or you can be in love, you know? So I know, like, it's not benefiting my relationships to be right. Like, I remember once I had this woman, like friend of mine, say, "You like to be right, Robin." And it was like a fight, you know? And she's like, "Well, I know you like to be right." And I was like, "I don't like to be right. I'm going to be right about not letting you be right."
Wanting to be right. Yeah. Exactly.
So what we came to realize with my coaching was like, wow, I really have like this fear around being wrong. And so she's like, "What does it mean? Like, what happens if you're wrong?" You know? And then we did a similar process where it's just, what if I'm wrong, that means, you know, I like essentially like not loved, or I don't remember how to take it through, but it all came back to like, what's the worst thing and what that really meant. And eventually it all drilled down to like me not helping people. And that's like death to me, you know, but
right.
It stems from somewhere, but it's deeper and deeper and deeper. So do you do that on the like negative side or just the positive side?
What I would do with people on the negative, whatever we call the negative side, negative, is get to, okay, well, when did that start? When was your first aversion to being wrong? And look at the situation that birthed it. Because if you can get to what happened that had you create that "I have to be right" thing, because it's, you weren't born a baby going, "I have to be right." You know, it happens at some point, it gets birthed. And usually it's, you know, between 3 and 8 or something like that, where something happens. And then as a child, we respond to that situation or react to that situation with a decision, you know, and that decision for you might've been, "I have to be right to survive." It's like, it occurs for us, like, if we're not right, we're going to like die or something, even though that's not real. But right, for a kid, that's, you know, it's kind of like me at 5 going, "Well, you can't do your art as your career." It's like a forceful decision that then becomes like the prison bars of our life.
Is it? So I feel like both my parents are like that too. Like they want to be right, you know, and not to a degree that it's, well, I mean, you know, it's not the best of their, you know, their characteristics, I guess, but definitely, you know, my dad, both of my parents, I feel like they want to be right and they like to be right. And like similarly, and I can think of a scenario that I feel like I've talked about in coaching calls or like therapy type things of like, you know, "Oh, this situation happened." Like when I went to my dad for help on my math homework, and he was explaining to me. And I'm like, "I don't understand." And he's like, "I don't know what you don't get. I don't know how to show you any differently. I don't know. Like, I don't know what you want me to do. Like, I just showed you." And he was like, so frustrated. And that was one of my like, "Oh, I'm stupid," but I don't know that that's a,
no, I would look there to say, okay, well, what did you decide in that moment when he said, "I don't know what you don't get"? Then what did you say to yourself or to him out loud or in your head?
Yeah, I don't remember what happened, but I'm assuming what I said, like, it was definitely like more on the stupid side. I don't, you know, I have other references to feeling stupid and what happened when I felt like, oh, I decided that I was stupid, but I don't know what happened first. I think it was. Yeah.
If you have a conversation going on that you're stupid, then the flip side of that is I have to prove I know.
True. Correct. And I did my whole life, right? Like I was trying to prove that I was smart, you know? And so maybe it is, because I also think I ran the pattern, and I go back through this sometimes when I'm like really stressed, is like, I don't know how, like it's like when, you know, figuring out what to do is like, I don't know. I do it less and less now because I feel like I can figure things out, but that was definitely a pattern. Like, I don't know how.
Yeah. And if that's your initial go-to, it started somewhere and then you just developed a compensation for it, you know, like being really smart or being resourceful or being whatever you use.
Or having people think that I'm smart.
That's right.
Straight A's. Yeah, that's what I did.
Well, it doesn't matter. See, if you are fundamentally, if you have a conversation going on that you're stupid, even though you've proven and you've gotten degrees and you've it doesn't matter how much stuff you get, because it's on top of the foundation of I'm stupid. So the more you pile on it, the bigger the foundation gets. So it's almost like if people go, wow, you're so brilliant. Mm. On the inside, you're like, if they only knew, you know, you might not say that on the outside because you've got the facade. This is how human beings work. This is not unique to you or your family. This is what it is to be a human being. And I've worked with 200,000 people around the world. And no matter where you find human beings, you find an addiction to being right. You know, it's almost like they'd rather be right than happy, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm not alone. So what, any specific advice you give people? I mean, besides obviously working with you would be the ideal, but if we all have challenges with mindset and challenges with, you know, we all want to manifest, you know, those things and get that stuff faster. And of course there's just noise, right? Or there's just friction. There's things that are like, I believe also law of attraction, like we're creating everything, our present, our future, all those things. So how, I guess if we were just to do it on our own, are there some tips that you can give us, like what we can do that can help us improve that? So we can be unmessable with, is that how you?
I would say, first of all, I don't think doing it on your own is fruitful. I mean, I don't do it on my own. I have coaches and I have, you know, mentors and all that kind of stuff. So I think that anything you're going to accomplish on your own is limited. But that being said, even listening to your show is not on their own. So they're going to have whatever tips or steps. I would start with what's your vision, what's your dream, what is it that you want to accomplish, and then look at. The second step would be to look at, okay, what messes with you? What stops you in taking the actions that are required to fulfill on that vision, right? And then I'd look at, okay, what are the red flags that are telling me that I'm about to go down that road? So what happens physically in my body? You know, again, the hot neck or whatever it is that happens. So identify that. And then I'd go on a hunt for those things. So I just test it out for a week, you know, go on a hunt for your hot neck. You know, when is my neck getting, when I'm in situations like this, I'm going to now know that is going to be a messable with moment for me. So I'm going to make sure I pre-create some place to go to an alternative road that I can shift to. Now, what would someone who was coming from a space of peace and freedom say right now? Because it's a very different world than the irritation thing. But I have to say, I have a ton of free stuff for people because I am committed that people develop themselves in this muscle. So even if they don't want to like hire me, that's fine. Right. I've got free stuff. I've got videos. I've got recordings of podcasts. I've got newsletter. I've got so much material on my website for people because my real game is that, you know, Unmessable With becomes a household name and people get to fulfill their dreams now, not someday. They actually live the life of their dreams and are empowered to be unmessable with no matter what life is throwing at you. And life is throwing stuff at us a lot more so now than ever. So it's kind of a useful muscle to develop.
Yeah. And it's like a road you have to continue to be committed to. It's not something like I never, I think I told you this last time, but like I was not exposed to personal development until I became a financial advisor and someone came into the office and sold me a ticket to the Tony Robbins event that I only went because I thought if I didn't go, then my supervisors would tell me I'm not allowed to complain anymore because I complained a lot. And I was like, but this isn't working. This isn't working. Like I was so focused on like all the negativity and what wasn't working. And then I was like, well, I better go to this because they say it's going to help me. And I'm like, okay, if it doesn't, like, then I can still complain. And if it does, then that's good too.
Yes. So it's, you can't lose. Sounded
amazing. I've come a long way, baby. But it's like that was the first time I was exposed to, wow, like I can create my own destiny. I control my life. I really did not know that. Like, yeah. And so now, you know, after whatever, I don't know how long it's been, 15 years, 20 years almost, where I've been exposed to that, I'm like, it's so obvious to me. And the law of attraction is not like a belief. It's a fact. Like all that stuff to me now is very obvious. Like being able to grow a business, like there are things that you need to do. It's not, you know, optional. You have to be willing to stretch outside your comfort zone. You have to do things. You have to take risk. Like you got to do things that you are, I mean, constantly like afraid of, like all the time. And it's hard to believe, like I entered entrepreneurship as a financial advisor, not knowing I was becoming an entrepreneur, thinking I was just like gonna, you know, get commissions and kind of make the money I wanted to make. But truly, like you're a business owner, you're an entrepreneur, and like you have to be willing to play the part. But once I realized that, like I assumed, like now, like I said, years later, I assume everybody knows that, but I don't think they do. I think it's like we all get lost in, you know, the circumstances. And that's another thing Jennifer Hudi said. I think she quoted Mary Morrissey. She said, hold the vision, not the circumstance. Well, the vision, not the circumstance, because like you said, like there's always going to be things, and it's going to be how you react to it or don't react to it. That's going to determine essentially your life today and the rest of your life. Yeah. So, I'm a big fan of all that. And I think if you, like Tony Robbins says, if you're not growing, you're dying. Like we have to continually work on ourselves. And I remember when I did hire that prosperity coach, I was like, I was having challenges in the business, just like constant, you know, running. We still have a lot of those challenges, a lot of running and a lot of like, you know, push instead of just like, oh, things are just working.
Hello.
Yeah. So we can talk about my problems later, but I hired her thinking like, I know if I just improve myself, my business, like I'll improve my business and everything will start to come together. And I'm still on that path and definitely not perfect. I just had this event and this woman said to me, cause she saw one of my social media posts where I went Facebook Live a couple of years ago, I think it was. And I was like in the closet crying because I was like crying, like, not just like, oh, I'm a little sad. It was like, I made a financial mistake and lost like $60,000. And I was like, when I'm crying this bad, I'm going to like get my phone out and like actually tell the world instead, because I've learned vulnerability actually is going to help someone. And she said that was what made her decide to end up like coming back and working with me and all that, which is a really cool indicator. But anyway, like, I just feel like all these challenges are just like part of the gifts to become the person you're meant to be, to attract what you want. And if we stay on that path, like I said, like you're going to have everything you want. Will it come when you want it? Probably not. You got more to learn.
Or maybe it'll come in 3 weeks before you.
Maybe it'll come in 3 weeks faster than you thought.
So, exactly. I think that's very true, Robin, because, you know, for me, I was a landmark for a long time. I always had an entertainment company. I managed actors. I had a nonprofit. I worked in the community, blah, blah, blah. But when I left Landmark, it was really like, okay, what am I going to create right now? And I didn't know. And this is a year ago. And I said, you know, I could do nothing. I could, you know, just trade stocks. I could write a book. And I let myself, you know, spend 3 months in nothing, so that I had some an experience of detaching from my 30-year career, my life's work, right? And in that space, I was like, I love designing programs. I want to empower people to be unmessable with. I'm going to run with this. And that was the whole thing. And so in the last year, I've created all of this. Wow. And it's just got a life of its own at this point. It's organically happening. It's all my creation. I thought I was going to semi-retire. I've never been busier in my life, you know, than I am now, but it's all what I'm creating. So it's like a joy. You know, but, and I think for women and for people, but especially for women reinventing themselves. I meet so many women, you know, over 40 that are like, I don't want to be stuck in what I've been doing all this time, whether it's whatever it is, whether it's their job, their company, they want to start a new vision. And people have to develop a muscle to invent themselves newly. And that's that space of creation. That's why I'm so committed to people developing that muscle, because you can use it in anything.
Yeah. And that's also what I like. That's like the first step is like the space, because if you don't if you have so much noise, you don't have the space, like you can't create it. So that's a good reminder for me, because I'm going to put some more time towards my vision and creating this, because I just finished my event. I have a little space. I'm going to use it.
Good. So. Yeah. No, use this. Listen, before you can create anything, you got to create nothing.
Oh, I love it. That's a good quote. Put that one on social media. Awesome. And you reminded me of one more thing, because if you like this stuff and talking about becoming a growth junkie, well, you can go to podcast episode 103. It's called Become a Growth Junkie with Emily Ranson. And so anything along these lines, you can go back into our podcast if you like this mindset stuff and get some extra tools. So tell them where to find you and get all those, the free stuff, because that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's theartofbeingunmessablewith.com. So that's the website, and you can get everything there.
Awesome. Theartofbeingunmessablewith.com. Okay, cool. And if you haven't watched the original episode, I believe it's episode 134. So go back to the original episode to hear a little bit more about the girl band, Boy Crazy, and all the stuff, good stuff we talked about. We did talk about the energy, and I was talking about the reaction and so not reacting.
Yeah, I think you were having a printer issue that day.
Oh, yeah, the printer issue. Oh, that's been resolved. We bought a new printer, like a nice one. And yeah, that was not best use of my time. Okay, but thank you for joining us, and thank we'll see you next time.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.